Welcome to the Nerd Hour. What is up?
Yes.
What is up, folks?
Nothing.
Hopefully we don't sound like shit. If we do sound like shit, chat room, please tell us, because then Hammy will have to get his ass up on Skype.
Yeah, especially because I'm trying a new setup.
Yeah, Cornak's trying a new setup. My computer's always shaky. So let us know, that, like, if once it starts to consistently get bad, audio-wise.
Well, no, I still have the same computer. It's just now I'm in the basement.
Oh. All right, so same machinery, new kicks. Got it. Gotcha.
Yeah, we just got the mold out here, so I'm thinking of setting this place up.
Like I said, as you can see, we're short-staffed for now. Ariel should be on at some point, hopefully. Hopefully she got the text. If not, Butt Monkey's going to be without his internet girlfriend. So we got that. You know, I'm just waiting to see if everything's... All right, sounds okay to, according to Chris McManamy from The Shoot Sundays from 2 to 4 on Radio FUBAR. And we got Ariel coming in.
Yay!
We
are not alone.
Yes, we are not alone now. We've got Ariel. What's up?
Hello.
How's it going? So I'm going to cut this intro music. We're just going to get going with it. If you want to Skype the Nerd Hour, that is unless Hammy ends up having to take over due to technical difficulties, then it'll be whatever the brain stew one is. But Monkey has professed his love to you in chat, Ariel.
Oh, okay. Hello.
And
sorry I'm late. I was looking at panels that were going to be at New York Comic Con, and I did not notice what time it was.
Yeah, no, I nerdgasm because...
Also, I was watching Haven, but, you know...
Oh, you mean with Adam Edge Copeland?
Yeah, dude, that show is awesome. Don't even.
There's a few things we're going to do. I know there's a bit that you guys actually hatched about fan fiction that we're going to debut. And I have an idea that is going to run until like the end of October. And, you know, we're going to go through that. And that one you'll probably be kind of not surprised as in didn't see it coming, but just you didn't hear about it until you just got on. So,
oh boy,
we're going to have that. But I do want to brush up on Comic-Con a little bit because it is in a few weeks.
And holy shit.
Also, I know is I can already tell you what two roundtable interviews I'm going to try to do.
Oh, yo, I've planned out my weekend. Like, Friday, the only panel I really want to go to Friday night is the Bob's Burgers one.
Yeah, that's right, because H. John Benjamin's going to be there
yeah,
now.
Yeah, but did you hear about the Archer panel?
Just found out all the people from Archer are there, so...
Yeah, 11 a.m. Saturday, main stage, which is the former IGN theater, which is where I will be spending the entirety of my day Saturday, is just in that room.
Oh, I can't wait.
Is going to be that panel I'm going to see, and then there's a few others in there that I'm like, all right, whatever. But then I'm really excited for the Teen Wolf one, I know. And then... But that show is really good. And then the Walking Dead one later.
And I know there's probably one for the League.
Yeah, but I don't think it's on one of the main stages, but I don't know which one it is. I know there's a bunch of Adult Swim ones, too.
Because I know,
and then Sunday, I'm going to the Gillian Anderson X-Files
nice.
One.
Because I know pretty much, like, all the cast of the League is also there that day.
Yeah.
So Friday's probably going to be my big interview day and buying shit day, and then Saturday's going to be panel day.
Yeah, that's basically Friday. I have one panel I'm going to, but most of the day is just buying stuff, autographs, and things like that. Saturday is just panels all day. Sunday is, like, the same thing. It's, like, final, like, little purchases and then any autographs I didn't get or photo ops or things. And then at 4, just have one panel I'm going to.
Yeah, and I got to check the 49er schedule, too, because that'll impact when I leave Sunday. Because, for me, Sunday is also going to be just buy stuff that I didn't get yet or get any autographs.
Yeah, I kind of want to go on Thursday because there's some good stuff going on then, too. But then I'm like, eh.
I know there's the comedy show they're doing.
Yeah, and then there's, like, the Haven panel, which I do enjoy the show, so I'm going to watch the panel, but then I'm like, I can't afford to go Thursday, too.
Yeah, but...
Like, I've budgeted for 3 days, like...
And Chris McManamy said he's definitely going to the St. Louis Comic-Con in April, but the fact that now they're doing, like, panels for Archer, like, big shows like
Dude,
that...
Dude, they have a Once Upon a Time panel, too, and they've never had that, but it is at the same time as the Teen Wolf panel, and it's in a completely different theater. And I'm like, fuck, like...
Like, I'm telling you, New York Comic-Con is becoming as big as San Diego.
And I like that it is, but then I hate it because now I have to decide. Like,
you have to decide, and that just means more people. This is the first time that I know of that individual day passes have sold out as quickly as they have.
This is Sophie's choice for Ariel.
It is, because I want to see Once Upon a Time, but I also want to see Teen Wolf, but then I also need to stay in the one theater because that's also where The Walking Dead is, so I'm just choosing to stay in the one theater.
And you know there's probably going to be a last-minute Marvel panel, like for the movies.
Well, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is also in the main theater, that's why I'm staying there.
Because
that's at 5, and then I think after that is The Walking Dead one, so I'm like, it's worth it just to stay in there for me.
Yeah.
Because there's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's Walking Dead, there's the Teen Wolf one, there's the Archer one early in the day. Saturday is just my panel day.
New York Comic Con, Chris, is going to be 2 weeks, I believe? Two or three weeks?
Yeah, it's in 2 weeks. It's the 11th to the 13th, but it's technically also the 10th to the 13th, because you can go Thursdays if you have a four-day pass or like a press pass like us.
Yeah.
I wonder if one of my old professors is going to be there.
Possibly.
Well, no, because it was Paul Levitz.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what that is.
Former DC
President of DC Comics.
DC, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Which we'll try to get him on the show, along with Cornax's friend's mother, who was Vicky in Friday the 13th Part 2.
God, Cornax is just like, I know people. I got peeps.
Cornax knows people.
Do you know
people.
How awkward it is watching a Friday the 13th documentary and having Punchy going, yeah, your friend's mom is still really hot, even yeah. after...
She do!
Oh, Sunday there's an Adventure Time panel.
Like, here's the thing, Cornax, and I pointed this out to you.
The League panel is Sunday at 12:15.
Good. Nice.
On main stage, so that's the IGN theater.
I'll have to go there then. But, mm-hmm.
Also William Shatner Q&A.
Cornax's friend's mom, like I said, played Vicky in Friday the 13th Part 2, which was released in 80 or 81, so over 30 years ago. And his name was Jason, is fairly recent. Right, Cornax?
Like 2009.
Fairly recent. She looks younger than people who are like in 5, 6, and 7. It's hilarious. And not like slightly, but much younger. And yet her movie was like much younger, but a couple years before.
Yeah.
So,
she was in a movie, I believe it was called Girls' Night Out, also known as Scaremaker. Now, the funny thing about that movie is she met her husband on the set. Guess who her husband played?
The killer.
Well, that's because I already told you, Punchy.
Yeah, pretty much. That, which is hilarious. Like, in the movie, he's trying to, or does kill her, I don't know which. And then they end up getting married. And something I just found out while
God's choices are so difficult.
Right?
Anyway.
Going off that for a second, I found something amazing, and I'm going to have to finally go to a Fathom Events thing.
Oh, yeah. Also, wait, I have to tell you what costume I'm going to dress up as for, like, at least two of the days.
What's that?
Sam from Trick or Treat.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. I've made the pajamas. Well, my mom made them, but the costume is on its way.
I'm going to finally have to go to a Fathom Events show.
Oh, yeah? For?
Because they're doing a Riff Trax Live, Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah,
and they're actually showing it in the movie theater.
Who just turned on their Xbox?
Probably Cornax. And it's actually going to be at the theater by us.
Nice.
On October 24th. So I will be going.
That's awesome.
Like, that's fantastic.
I also want to go to Chiller Theater, but then I'm like, Chiller. I'm going to be broke that entire weekend.
Well, like, for me, that gives like 2 weeks to be.
Wait, no. When is Chiller? Chiller is the day before Comic-Con.
No, Chiller's like 2 or 3 weeks after.
Oh, okay, so I have time.
Chiller's like late October.
Mm.
It's like the weekend before Halloween.
I kind of want to go because Katie Sagal's going to be there.
And Kim Coates from Sons of Anarchy.
I know, so. And I want autographs from them.
So if you, we were talking about this on
it's so difficult.
We were talking about this on Brain Stew also, some of the people that are there.
People should just start a Kickstarter so I can just be in photos. People. Pay for me to go to Comic-Con.
And then you got like Peter Bogdanovich and Vincent Pastore.
No.
Joey Lauren Adams.
Yeah.
Who else in the
computer? Thankfully not John Laurinaitis.
Scott Wilson of The Walking Dead.
Nice.
Herschel.
Yeah.
Billy from Gremlins, the guy who plays him.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Milo Ventimiglia, who was in Heroes and the...
I love Milo Ventimiglia. And he's also in Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, and he played Rocky's whiny son.
Yeah, but, you know.
You know, just Gilbert Gottfried and his squinty eyes.
No.
Stryker from Airplane 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Ralph Macchio, and I want a picture with him doing the crane kick.
Macchio.
He probably can't even do it nowadays.
He probably can't now.
Ken Foray.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, there's some good
so
stuff.
So excited to see stuff with Agents.
There's a Christmas Story thing, like, members from that movie. All the kids from the Willy Wonka movie, the original one, with Gene Wilder.
Nice.
So, it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be fun. Chiller always is.
And I know, it's like, I want to go, but then I'm like, money, and then I've just spent all this money at Comic-Con, and it's like, I can't.
See, I lucked out, because the first ever convention I went to, my friend's mom, Lauren, had me post as her nephew, so I got him free.
Oh, nice.
And then, as a reward, basically they had to go off to do a panel, and unfortunately I couldn't see that, but they asked me to guard the table so that nobody would steal anything. And because of that, I got autographs from all of them.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Including Warrington Gillette, who played the unmasked Jason in Part 2.
Cool.
And the thing was, there's a bit of controversy with the guy who played the masked Jason, Steve Dash, where he always complains about Warrington wasn't the real Jason, so he always signs his autographs as The Real Jason, Part 2. Mm. So Warrington, as a joke, because everyone, you know, because Steve whines about it, he signed it as The Real Fucking Jason.
Oh, shit.
And I was a kid. And to describe how I met my my friend, it was because we were both altar boys when we were younger. So I met his mom through the church. So it was kind of funny having that autograph, especially when I was like 14. And she was like, oh, what if your mom sees it? What she's going to think? My mom thought it was hilarious.
Well, it was pretty hilarious. So, what was I going to say? I got distracted. Do you have the fan fiction bit ready, Cornax?
Oh, yes, I do. Oh.
You do?
I got to go find mine.
All right. We're gonna do that. That's
wait, which one did you find, Cornax?
Creation of a Dry Bones.
Now,
what is that one?
The one that includes the words morally justified rape.
Oh my god.
Fantastic.
Alright, I need to find a category, so.
That is amazing.
I should just Google worst fanfiction.
You really should, because this story is so notorious that it was long since deleted. The only way you could find it was basically on Topless Robot, where they had a review of it.
10 most mind-shatteringly awful fanfictions. Oh.
I say we just get the most depraved, fucked-up shit and call this bit fucked-up fanfiction.
Well, that's what... Yeah, it's going to be a recurring bit, so...
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God.
I'm just thinking of... Oh, we could pull that one we read on 360 on 420 that we never finished.
Oh, I see which one you found.
Just trying to do my show, guys.
Just trying to read my fan fiction about Randy Orton raping Jeff Hardy in the ass.
Oh, God. That's like a go-to when it comes to reading gay fan fiction.
Oh, boy.
That's like the go-to of 360 on 420. Just because it's so bad.
No, the problem is, like, I used to look up, like, the really dumb, crappy fan fiction, and I used to post it on my Twitter. But the problem is, with some of the wrestling fan fiction, they don't give a description, and then you click on something, and then you find something so fucked up, you just go, oh my god.
Yeah, apparently there was, like, one that was, like, Thomas the Tank Engine.
What?
I saw it on Tumblr, but I didn't see anything. And they were like, do you ever just find weird stuff on the internet? And then it was, like, Thomas's train wheels shivered or something. And they were like, what the fuck?
You see, there's another one that I know of. I'm not going to read this one because I heard this one read a long time ago on a different podcast. It's basically Lightning McQueen from Cars meeting a gel-based tentacle monster that rapes him.
Oh my god.
In the tailpipe.
No. I'm just going to search. Let's see. Popular.
Hey, Butt Monkey is asking you some questions, Ariel.
What is happening? What?
You'll see.
How am I like Abe Lincoln?
I don't know.
Well, you are
that I don't shut up.
You are his internet girlfriend, so.
No.
Oh, you're not any. Oh, internet.
Wait,
breaker.
No, I said oh.
Oh, you said oh. Oh my god.
Oh Jesus.
What?
There's a bunch of shit in the chat.
Literally.
I don't want to look. I'm not looking.
Oh my god. How does that much shit come out?
I think it was. The only way I can think of it is a butt plug was in there for more than a day. And then they let it out. And then they waited for what happened.
How about next week I'll find one?
Okay.
You find one this time.
Now, explain the bit. Now, what we're doing is, I believe, reading bad fan fiction.
We're reading disturbing, fucked up, terrible, even just cracked out fan fiction weekly. To really creepy video game chiptune music.
Mm-hmm.
I believe for this one we selected Lavender Town.
And we begin.
I don't hear the music.
Yeah, Punchy, get on it.
Lavender Town.
Music.
Alright, let me get the Lavender Town music.
Jesus, God. Ugh.
No, we set it up, man.
You set it up, but I'm also, you know. Just
swing and a miss.
No, I'm talking about Butt Monkey.
I'm really glad that I'm not in the chat.
There you guys go.
You should play the fox, but anyway.
A creation of a dry bone.
You need to turn down the music a bit.
Yeah. That was overpowering front. That's overpowering front.
God damn it. You there?
Yeah, it's too loud.
Yeah, like. There you go. Now it's too low.
It's YouTube.
Alright, here we go. A red Koopa sat alone in his home, anxiously awaiting his lover's return from the castle. He stared at the tired reflection in his cup of coffee and wondered why the enlistment process was lasting into the AM. The green soldier stood silent in the doorway for a moment,
God.
A letter clutched tightly in hand. Slowly and dragging his feet as he did, the Koopa made his way from the door to the bed, climbing in and falling asleep without a word to his red partner. Frustrated, the red Koopa resigned to simply wrench the letter from his lover's hands. He took his seat once again and began to smooth out the sheet, noting the bright red Bowser insignia before turning it over to the side written on. With bags heavy under his eyes, the crimson turtle began to read to himself. It was a formal letter, at least by the Koopa Army standards. First and foremost, it congratulated the Green Koopa for accepting enlistment in the largely volunteer Drybones troops. Secondly, it informed him of his new living quarters deep in a submerged castle outpost. Finally, it commended his bravery in accepting death to enter the troop, be it by suicide or standard procedure. The Red Koopa's stomach churned the coffee that threatened to come up. The thought of his lover dying by any means was enough to chill him, but to know it was willingly done threatened psychosomatic illness. As his stomach finally began to settle, the Red Turtle made his way back to the shared bed. He huddled up close to his lover, wrapped his arms around his waist, and fell into uneasy slumber as dawn came.
It wasn't until late midday that one of the two began to wake. The green soldier's eyes opened up slowly. With a long yawn, he climbed out of the bed, took a seat opposite from where the red Koopas sat before, and
like
looked around their living space. Hmm?
I don't like where this is going.
You won't. With new eyes, everything in the room could kill him if he wished. The sink could be filled and drowned in. Chemical
what?
Cleaners underneath it gorged on to the point of a fatal poisoning. Burn alive in the oven, or cut himself in a variety of ways with a variety of knives. He found it all not nearly dramatic enough until a look at his lover inspired him. A hanging with the bedcloth would proceed nicely with him taking the sheet, forming a noose to tie around the overhead lamp, and having his corpse greet his soon-to-be cold lover. Wasting no time in the excitement not felt since he first entered Bowser's castle to enlist, the green soldier took the sheet from the bed and began to work. The plan fell apart within moments. The red Koopa's eyes snapping open as soon as the sheet was pulled from him. His lover was suddenly sad enough to die and needed an emotional boost now. He pulled the green soldier's shoulder to bring him face to face and quickly sputtered what he wanted to say for later. We have to fuck now! Using natural strength superior to his partner's, the red Koopa quickly pinned the other's hands down against the sink cabinet, ready to do anything needed to save his boyfriend. The throw of desperate passion gave the red turtle strength for mortally justified... I apologize. The throw of desperate passion gave the red turtle strength for morally justified rape. His heart raced as his free hand began to fiercely pump at his own soft penis. Panting from effort and emotional pressure, the green Koopa could only watch on, a hint of anger slowly building on his face as waves of musk from the other began to waft toward him. It was almost sickening. The green soldier's gag warning of incoming bile did nothing to avert the red Koopa from his frenzied approach, as his flushed face and drop of pre-cum from his erect penis indicated. He was as ready as he'd be for this until the green Koopa began to scream, "Stop!" And the red Koopa was shaken just enough not to force his way into the resisting soldier. "I should," the crimson turtle began, "but this is for your own good." With his eyes shut tight and his lover's screams beginning to shrill, the red Koopa shoved a little more than half his cock into an unwilling and ill-fitting hole. hold on, that's... He repressed a moan with grit jaw as he tried to fit more of it in, all the while hoping they would both have pleasure from this in time.
Oh no, that's... yeah. Mm-mm.
Yellow thighs clashed into each other as the turtle thrust himself in and out of his victim. The red Koopa tried not to show his enjoyment, instead favoring an expression torn between guilt and fear. Now, a moment later, the red Koopa's face contorted into a look of physical pain, the green Koopa finally resisting with a free kneecap and a harsh blow to the other's crotch. The pain momentarily subsiding, the green soldier began to yell again. With that, the green turtle bought just enough time in shocking his lover again to painfully stretch his leg between their bodies, knee pressed into his stomach, and clawed foot into the other's chest and push off his oppressor. The green turtle got up with all speed and readied himself for a fight, hoped to be personally destructive. The red Koopa slowly got to his feet as well, wincing from fresh claw marks his lover's foot had put into his chest. Erection still hard and ready to continue once his partner was under control. The crimson turtle wasted no time in tweaking and retrying his plan, charging the other at full force from where he had been pushed to. The green turtle put down his fists, attempting a new approach to suicide, ready to be knocked to the ground by his furious partner. Both plans began as intended, the red Koopa immediately knocking down the other with a blow to one eye strong enough to blacken it. With a cry of pain, the green Koopa let himself hit the ground once again, and
be dominated by the red one, welcoming all violence that was in store. The red Koopa pounded at the other's face with all his might, hoping to knock him unconscious long enough to properly plan another step. However, even as the bruises were formed and bones barely dented, the green Koopa began to laugh softly, smiling as he could with a bloody and swollen mouth. He began to speak as he was pounded on. "It's almost done. I can't feel anything." The green Koopa brought a hand to his face, gripped the freshly bruised eye through an engorged eyelid, and pulled it from its socket with an audible rip and visible gush of fluids. The red turtle backed away in shock and fear, his eyes transfixed upon the gaping hole that had been a left eye. His will to fight had died along with his lover's body. Entranced by terror to the point of losing bladder control, the turtle watched his partner slowly tear himself apart. Muscle tissue littered the ground as the green Koopa bared every part of himself. His every vital organ he revealed and then spilled out onto the floor, slowly working from the top down. His other eye was tossed to join the other. His esophagus was torn with lungs in tow to be thrown just over the red Koopa's head. His barely beating heart crushed between his fingers and let slide down to rest on his intestines. The intestines themselves allowed to be pulled like a scarf out from their original position down to the floor, and testicles with the other sexual organs violently ripped off and presented as a cruelly made gift to his lover, before dropping those to the floor too. The other Koopa had long since spewed his coffee-blackened bile onto the floor, gripping his wounds and crying in failure and grieving as he did. After discarding much of the flesh on his feet, the new and bloody dry bones approached the sickened survivor. A skull began to speak from atop the skeleton. "It's done." The red Koopa only sobbed to himself, surrounded by biological filth as he did. "Come now," the dry bones said with as close a sneer as he could manage. "This is for your own good." He pushed on the Koopa's shoulder to meet him face to face. Bloodshot and teary eyes watched as what was his lover used a bloody hand of bone to wet and slick the still erect penis being sported. The Koopa hated it, but was all too tired to resist the hand that slowly pumped at his penis. He could not scream, he could not push away, and he could not enjoy the masturbation he was given. The red Koopa nearly vomited again as he felt a blood-slicked finger bone worm in under the foreskin and gently massage the crown. Despite the growing unease in his stomach, his body reacted where his emotions and mind wouldn't and ejaculated onto the recently deceased after a few more seconds of pumping. "There," the dry bones whispered into the Koopa's ear. "Now you're ready." Dragging a foot behind him, the dry bones pulled the resigned Koopa from one home to another, tugging the deathly depressed turtle into the ocean. The end.
And that has been your weekly fucked up fanfiction of the week here on the Nerd Hour. Holy crap. This is a 15-minute song that I had playing.
Uh-huh.
10 minutes and 49 seconds of it was played.
Yeah, I'm sorry I messed up at a few points.
That was a screwed up one. Like, holy.
I took off my headphones halfway through.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, nope.
The justifiable rape of a Koopa Troopa. And so, with that, we're going to do a few more topics here and then go to break. And then when we come back from break, I'm talking as if that's happening right now, but it's not. It's going to be a little while before break. But
I love how just mortified you guys are.
That's, yeah.
I told you what you were getting.
Good point. So, Chris Hemsworth decided to talk a little comic book movie smack. What? He decided to set the record straight, and as for the cinematic universes, he said, "We're just winning, aren't we? That's not really a rivalry."
No.
Well,
wrong.
But, I mean, regardless of what Ariel thinks of the writers of the Batman and Superman movies, their movies are, for the most part now, like not including anything properties aside from there yet, are making money. So it's not like DC is just always releasing turds.
No, but all they have is Batman and Superman.
Yeah, but I think the more
Marvel has the better
selection,
and not only that, but the better connection with their universe. Like, the reason DC is trying to do a Justice League movie is to keep up with Marvel.
Yeah, but they, you know, they should.
And
just...
they don't have the connection, like the way to put it together.
Yeah, they kind of.
Like, they do, but they're screwing it up. They screwed it up.
They kind of screwed up with letting Nolan dictate the Batman, his Batman.
Yeah, see, and this is the problem: is that he works for Batman, but any other superhero, no. Like, that was the biggest problem with Man of Steel, is they tried to put the grittiness into that, and you're like, it doesn't work.
But I would say that, as far as comics are concerned, DC's winning.
I think the only way they could have made grittiness work for Man of Steel was by not doing what they did. The only way gritty and Superman works is if you go to the death of Superman.
Yeah.
Him fighting
against... And you can't just do that for an opening movie.
Well, you kind of can if you, like, split it up into three different chapters.
Yeah.
You sort of have the beginning where it's leading up to it. You have the middle where it's the big blowout fight with Doomsday at the end. You know, Superman's dead. And then you have the third one, which is all about all the guys that come in afterwards, like Superboy and
Yeah, but in
Eradicator.
One movie, that's too much.
Hmm?
In one movie, that's way too much.
No, that's why I said split up into a trilogy.
So, you guys want to hear a little stat as far as summer movies and social networking?
Sure. What?
Yeah, why not?
The most followers between Facebook, Twitter, and Google Plus of movies in the summer. The leading one was Man of Steel, followed by The Great Gatsby.
Oh my god, no. This is already,
After Earth. Turbo.
What?
Yeah. After Earth, well, you know, Will Smith movie. Turbo.
No, what is happening?
The Internship.
Oh, my God.
World War Z.
I hate America. I hate everything.
This is the End.
That should be higher.
America.
Yeah. The Lone Ranger.
No.
The Conjuring.
Okay.
And Pacific
Rim. Higher. And what?
And Pacific Rim.
Should be higher.
Now,
the only three that should be on that list is Pacific Rim, The Conjuring, and This is the End.
Number of Facebook fans. This is going from least to most, as opposed
to... Oh, my head is in my hands, no.
Alright. The fifth most, The Smurfs 2. Despicable Me is number 4.
Okay, that's acceptable.
Third place is Iron Man 3.
Okay, that's acceptable.
Second place is The Hangover Part 3.
No.
And first place is Fast and Furious 6.
Okay, that's acceptable.
It does have a... It's a franchise with a huge following. I mean, you could...
That's acceptable, yeah.
Also
because they've gotten better with time.
Yeah. And now, as for animated films...
Oh.
Number 1 was Despicable Me 2.
Okay.
Number 2 was The Smurfs 2.
No.
Number 3 was Monsters University.
Okay.
Number 4 was Turbo.
I don't get it, because I heard mediocre things about that movie.
No, I don't.
Planes was 5th, and Epic was 6th.
Planes? Are you fucking kidding me? Some horrible offshoot of the Cars universe? No.
You know what? That answers some questions I had about the Cars movies, but then creates a whole lot more of them.
Box office busts and Facebook fizzlers, they call this one. Comparing the domestic grosses of this summer's most disappointing box office performers with their social status. The first one, this isn't really an order, but it shows Pacific Rim, which... It was only considered a bust in America, by the way.
In America, because people are fucking retarded.
Because people are retarded.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Fuck.
Yeah, what the fuck is happening in the chat?
I don't know. Buttmonkey's drunk.
The image version of what Coletta used to do when he was on the Nerd Hour?
Yeah, stop.
All right. So, all right, Buttmonkey, please stop with the pictures because we're trying to do a show. It's distracting everyone. Stay in though.
At this point, you're starting to get like little Matt with pictures.
No.
Yeah, we're going to start banning.
All right. So Pacific Rim, 17th ranked in the summer box office, 21st ranked in social followers. The Lone Ranger, 19th.
Number one ranked in personal awesomeness.
Yes. The Lone Ranger was 19th ranked in both. Wait, time for CRR. Butt Monkey, you all right, buddy? Anyway. White House Down, 24th ranked in both categories. After Earth, 28th ranked in the box office, 12th ranked in social followers. RIPD, 32nd in summer box office rank, and 29th in follower rank. Which, ouch. For independent films that gained 10,000 or more social followers this summer, number one was Fruitvale Station. Number two was The Spectacular Now. Number three was Before Midnight. Number four was Much Ado About Nothing. And number five was The Way, Way Back. I only have heard of one of those.
I've only heard of Much Ado About Nothing because of Joss Whedon.
That's pretty much the reason.
This makes me mad. Because all of those movies should be way more appreciated.
This is making me realize how dumb people really are.
Right? Oh my god. I think it was you and I that had this entire conversation about how pissed off I was that something like as great and world-building and not cliche-riddled and like interesting as Pacific Rim loses out to some shoddy-made sequel.
It lost out to
Grown Ups too. Cashing in on the former fame of some half-assed SNL comedian.
Yeah.
But something that's interesting and well thought out, like with the same lame jokes as a million other comedies, and the one before it, just the same jokes over and over. Oh, we're old guys doing young things. Remember when we used to do this? Wink. That's the whole movie. And then fucking Pacific Rim, which has an excellent storyline, a great world built around it that doesn't just include the one thing that's being dealt with.
And it's mostly original.
It is mostly original. Yeah. By an interesting director with like a nice vision and great cinematics, doesn't make the money that it deserves. And then everybody complains why we don't have original movies. It's because you fucking retards don't go see it.
No.
You assholes go see Grown Ups 2 instead of something that is original and interesting that comes out and nobody sees it, and that's why we don't get good movies, and then that's why studios won't greenlight better original movies. Because they're afraid that they won't make money. Because they don't, because people are fucking idiots. That's what's wrong with Hollywood. Stop complaining about it. The reason that Hollywood has all these problems with remakes and shit like this is because nobody goes see good movies when they're out.
Because Butt Monkey asked for it, I gave him a quick kick from the chat, but not for long because... But anyway.
I'm mad.
No, like, dude, it's enraging. And same thing with The Judge. Like, people give ridiculous reasons for not seeing movies, too.
Like, it's one of those movies that was worth the money. Like, if you want to go in and you're spending this money for, like, this movie, like, why are you spending $12 for a shit movie?
Well, that's the thing.
Grown Ups 2. No, like, Pacific Rim was worth every fucking penny.
That's the thing. My sister went to Redbox, got The Big Wedding and Admission, two shitty movies. But meanwhile, you know, when I had no car, it was like, I kind of want to go to the movies. You know, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, well, you should go see. I said, I want to see Pacific Rim because, you know, it was out.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time I said, all right, let's go. Nothing. But then she'll go out and she'll buy these really shitty Admission and The Big Wedding and, you know.
It's because nobody wants to give it a chance. They were all like, oh, it's Transformers. And it's not.
Well, I just hate romantic comedies, too. I don't know why so many fucking people watch those shit things.
I like them when they're done well.
In other words,
half the time they're the same thing.
Let's be honest, more than half the time.
Yeah, but, like, when they're done well, when it's interesting and the characters are interesting and you care.
I mean, it's not that I hate romance.
No, I understand what you're saying. It's just everything's derivative.
My favorite movie is Casablanca.
But everything is derivative. And then it's just a paint by numbers movie. More than half of romantic comedies are all paint by numbers, and they're not interesting. But then you have something like Sleepless in Seattle or When Harry Met Sally, and those are like the '90s good romantic comedies. When you gave a shit about the characters, and yes, you know that they're going to end up together, but it's the story that's interesting.
I'll admit, I liked You've Got Mail.
I do too.
I was a kid and I watched it and I liked it.
It's a great movie.
But then there are other shit, and what I hate is that there's one really fucked up, no one's allowed to talk about this, mainly because it could get my cousin blacklisted in Hollywood, but essentially there's a really shit romantic comedy out there where someone basically stole his idea and ruined it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Here's a hint. It was an Ashton Kutcher film, and he was writing it with Ashton Kutcher, and then Ashton dropped him from the picture.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, I think I know which movie this is.
Let me guess. Valentine's Day? Because that's what it was.
Oh, no, but okay.
Yeah. And it went from a regular movie to an ensemble piece.
Well, that's a shit movie.
And fuck Ashton. No, yeah, because it was originally supposed to be this idea of, a florist. He knows whose anniversary is coming up. He knows who's cheating on their wife. He knows who's in trouble, so they're getting their wife's favorite flowers, blah, blah, blah. Pretty good idea to have a romantic comedy with something based around that, right? And then you throw in 50 different A-list celebrities and take the main focus away, and then you have what was written by Ashton Kutcher.
Huh.
But no one's allowed to talk about it.
Fuck Ashton Kutcher. He sucks.
Well, there's a part of me that wants to hate him because he fucked with my family. There's a part of me that, you know, he does some nice things from time to time that goes, oh, why can't I hate you why can't I hate you more than I do right now? Oh, I think I found something for next week.
There you go. All right, so we got another story. Director Kevin Tanker, whatever the name is, he's the guy who did Mortal Kombat Legacy.
Yes.
He offers up an update on his Mortal Kombat movie.
Excellent.
He's the guy who's in charge of making a feature film reboot of the franchise, which it desperately needs because...
That would be amazing.
His update is they're still pushing through on it. The script is in a good place. They're just kind of figuring out the budget and locations and that whole process. When asked about whether the new movie would adhere to Legacy's continuity or be its own thing, he replied, "I think everyone's intention is to start fresh because we want Legacy to live on its own, possibly for multiple seasons. And when it comes to Mortal Kombat, it's been around for 20-plus years. We're going to take the mythology and add another layer to it so it can live on for another 20 years or more. I think this is a unique opportunity to set that groundwork."
That makes sense because not everybody will watch the web series and...
Yes.
Hey, who knows? If they make it good enough, and maybe the actual MK writers for the game will put it into canon.
And Season 2 will be debuting on the 26th. Also debuting that week.
Wait, the 26th?
Yeah, the 26th, that the new season debuts. Debuting on the 20th. Debuting in like 4 days, though.
Castle?
Well, okay, I guess that too, but...
Castle!
You know, remember when he played a preacher on Buffy?
Yes, Castle is the best show ever. Oh my god, I'm so excited. Yeah, you want to talk about a good romantic comedy? That entire show.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't watch a lot of TV, but I do like that show when I see it.
From season one to current, like, it's a progression of a relationship, and it is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
Dave, also premiering 2 days before on demand, is Curse of Chucky.
Oh, I don't care.
It's. I was telling this to Hammy when we were on Ustream. The reviews so far have been completely positive.
No.
Like, it's direct to video. Apparently, it brings back the seriousness of the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they stopped doing the mostly comedy stuff that the last two movies have kind of degenerated into.
Right.
And it's one of those, it could be the end of the franchise if it was set that way, or it could be the, you know, they could easily continue it on if people wanted to also.
It's kind of like a reboot, but not really, because not like how everyone thinks of film reboots.
Well, no, it's not going to be a reboot because...
No. Let me explain. It's like a reboot in that it's kicking the series back up again, but not a reboot as in they're starting over from the beginning.
Yeah, but they do want to do an official remake of it, too. Like, Don Mancini's been wanting to for a while.
Meh.
That's one of the few ones you could remake and still use the same actor, because he just has voice work.
That's one of the ones you can remake and pretty much just do the same thing again, because if you look at the original film still holds up.
Yeah.
It's not like of a sudden, if you look at it in 2050 and compare it to 1980, sure, the clothes are going to be different, but it's not going to be too out of date. It's going to be pretty timeless.
You know what? I'm glad you said that, and here's why. I was having a conversation with a friend earlier today, and we were talking about movies. And I came to the conclusion that movies now, stylistically and technology-wise, are going to be held to the same standard. Like they're going to age much better than movies from 20 years ago do now. Because I feel like
we've reached our technological peak somewhat.
Yeah, I think we've reached our technological peak. So a movie, and also we've reached our technological peak as far as filmmaking. Like everything's going to be crystal clear 1080p HD. They may kick it up a notch or two, but it's not going to be as drastic as what we would watch on TV in the 90s to what we would watch on TV now. Or movies.
And then they'll eventually make smell-o-vision.
Eventually.
And then Ethan Hawke will lose all of his fans because they can smell him.
But, like...
That motherfucker doesn't bathe at all. Let's be honest.
But, like I said, the movies are going to age much better now. Like, that are coming out now in 10 years. We might not have as many iconic movies like back in the day had. But, again, you can only tell with time. Look at, Friday the 13th was completely panned by film historians when it came out, and now is loved. So we're going to have movies like that that'll be much more regarded, too, than they were now. They Live is another example.
Oh, God, that movie.
That movie.
So, see, the only thing is, one of the most famous lines from that movie... It's not even that good unless you get it by someone else doing it.
Yeah.
I am here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. No, it's I'm here to kick ass and chew bubblegum. And I'm all out of gum.
So what do you think about that, Ariel? Do you think that movies will age much better than movies from back in the day? Or do you think something will happen where you'll be able to tell?
I mean... It's hard to say. Like, you can go and watch, like, Lord of the Rings and stuff now, and it still looks fabulous, even though it came out in, like, 2003, like, the first one. So the technology on that is still holds up.
Sometimes,
like, in the first one. And the same with the first Harry Potter. Like, the technology still holds up.
I don't think it's the technology that matters so much. I think it's the quality of the film itself.
Yeah.
And the quality on those is high. So, like, I think it's going to depend. Like, if you have a shitty movie, then no, the effects are going to be shit. Yeah. And they're not going to hold up. And we see that now. But
even, like, how they film it. Like, they used some film stock back in the day. So unless it's restored, it's, you know, it's going to be worse now. But now everything's digital. So,
have an extra copy of that hard drive.
Yeah, that's also an issue because while digital doesn't degrade, you can lose it. Like,
yeah, but I'm sure they have backups upon backups, and
also something that's great about old school film where it does degrade. Come on, like watch Grindhouse.
Yeah, there's certain things like that style that it's more tangible, and
yeah,
if you watch Hellraiser, it holds up, but it's tangible.
Yeah.
Compared to other slasher flicks.
And that's a whole other debate that I do eventually want to do, as far as movies are concerned. But I want to spend much more time on it than we're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
Because, that, like, that's a huge thing about like the difference between film and digital. And I want to save that for when we're going to more need it. But I do want to have that discussion one day.
Okay.
Because there's positives and negatives for both.
Yeah.
And I don't want to half get into it and then have to go to break. Because no, we're going to go to break soon. But like I do want to feature it on an episode one day. Like a whole episode.
Okay.
So we'll have that discussion down the road. And because I also want to line up people to call in for it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to make it a big, big episode. Before I go to break, though, before we go to break, sorry, guys. I do want to point out that after last week, it's been decided once a month we are going to do a movie-watching episode.
Yeah, we're still on for next month is still going to be Repo, the generic opera, right?
I believe so.
Oh, my God, please.
Unless a better suggestion is made, yeah.
No, this is the best suggestion. You do not want a better suggestion. This is literally the best suggestion.
All right, then Repo the Genetic Opera it is.
Yes.
So we're going to do that next month. So if you can either get a copy or download a copy to watch with us. That it'll give us time to think of how we're going to make sure everyone's synced up. You know? And so that's going to be a new recurring bit. When we come back, like I mentioned in chat, we're going to be until Halloween, well, the show before Halloween, we're going to be spotlighting a different director in the horror genre. Now, we're going to, I'll do an overview of the films, and then we're going to debate which ones we thought were the best ones, which ones we thought sucked. This week's subject, since I did kind of just make it up, so there's been very little prep time. This week we're going to do John Carpenter. Because I'm fairly certain Ariel and Cornax have seen enough of his movies.
Not really.
Really?
I tried to get more into them. Unfortunately, I couldn't find some of them. Like, and not as in, where Royce would say, go to Pirate Bay, as in, like, there were certain movies that I couldn't find on Pirate Bay easily.
All right.
With a good working link.
The ones I've seen are Halloween and The Thing.
All right.
Halloween I love, and The Thing is amazing.
I'll still go with the bit for this week, and then next week's director is going to be Wes Craven. So he gives you guys a week to...
Oh.
Huh?
I said, oh, I've seen a bunch of his movies.
Yeah, so it'll give you guys a week if you want to see any of his movies or that you haven't seen or, make sure if you've seen them or not. And then we'll do that. But we're going to go on break now. This is the Nerd Hour. We'll be back. We're going to discuss John Carpenter and then, some other stuff. Why not? It's going to be a bit of a lengthy break, but not too long. Nerd Hour.
Oh, you should make sure it's the right break and there's not commercials for other shows.
No, this one has more current breaks. I think the only thing is certain hosts' voices in it.
Oh.
But it's for a current MLR show, so fuck it. All right, guys. We'll be back.
Anus.
Hey, listeners. Yes, that means you. Missed your favorite More Like Radio shows live? No problem. Just go to morelikeradio.com/downloads. That's morelikeradio.com/downloads. More Like Radio's RSS feed works with your iThings, Zooms, Androids, Windows Phone, and anything else that can subscribe to an RSS feed. If you're so awesome that you only get your podcasts from iTunes, you can subscribe to our feed in iTunes by clicking the Subscribe to iTunes link right on the Downloads page. So what are you waiting for? Download More Like Radio podcasts and subscribe to our feed now. Yes, right now. Do it.
Here at More Like Radio, we're all radio professionals, especially Kevin from Alcohol by Volume. Marvel as he winds his way through the twists and turns of Skype.
Oh, you're about to get a Skype call.
Here we go. Answering the call.
So, yeah, not to interrupt this exciting hockey talk, but what's going on, guys?
And call not found, and he dropped me. That's fantastic.
It's under the impression this was a drunk show, not bore everyone that's listening show.
Well, I'm still in the process of drinking.
I think we lost Kevin, or Kevin decided to be lost.
You're still in the process of boring people.
And I just realized I put Dennis on hold somehow.
Say,
this is
that nightmare that I've been having of at some point finally getting on call and talking to somebody and being on air and everybody else just dropping. Dennis is back
there
now.
There you guys are.
Sorry, Dennis.
Wow, fucking radio professional over here doesn't know how to add people to conference.
Alcohol by Volume, Tuesdays, 6 to 8 p.m. only on MoreLikeRadio.com.
Hi, this is Marianne from Lust and Love. Recently, we decided the show needed more dicks, so we found the manliest man we knew to fill the spot, Dark Fox.
I know this is weird, but my boyfriend broke up with me because my dick is too short. He praised me about my skills and all, but is this a really good reason for a breakup? Because it's really hurting me until now. I can't seem to forget all the memories we had together. I know this can't be the reason, or maybe because he met another guy. I really cannot get over him because once he told me, I love your dick, whilst he was stroking it. That's the reason I will never let go.
Lust and Love, now gayer than ever. And that's saying a lot considering we used to have Hammy on the show. Join us Monday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern on MoreLikeRadio.com.
Hey, it's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Raya.
And of course, your host with the most, Big JP.
And we are
the Man Cave Radio Show.
Listen, check out our boys, The Sully Show, every Sunday from noon to 2, exclusively on
MoreLikeRadio.com.
That's right. Check them out,
bitches.
You'll love them.
I bet you will.
Yep.
Everybody, this is Joe Conte with Kenny Michaels from the Conte and Kenny Show, and we just wanted to let you know about a brand new podcast we are doing called Conte and Kenny Shorts.
It's a bunch of stuff that we had from the newer stuff that we just re-release from our regular 3-hour show on Monday nights, but we also have dug around and found all the good stuff that we've been doing for 7 years. Or if you like the crazy stories, there's a ton of them. We just got to find them, grab them, put them out.
Yeah, the podcast is anywhere from 20 to 35 minutes, and you get like 2 or 3 quick segments with a couple of little things in between, you know, little cute little things, and so far people like it. So the best way to do it is to either go to ContiandKenny.com or just subscribe on iTunes.
And also remember, I've only stopped doing cocaine for about 3 years, so there's 4 years of cocaine.
Ah.
Remember that. just as much drinking.
BC and AC. Before Coke and after Coke.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. I like it. BC and AC.
BC and AC. So,
there are some good times.
Yep. This is Conti and Kenny Shorts, a podcast of a podcast, which I like to say, based on our show, the Conti and Kenny Show.
Podcast of a podcast.
Yeah, because we do a show, but it's also a podcast. So that's a podcast of a podcast.
But we do a show, not a podcast.
But our show was still podcasted.
But if we podcasted it, then it would be not a show, it'd be a podcast. But if we do a show, then we podcast it, and then we a podcast of a podcast. But that doesn't sound right.
Do you think people are still listening now?
No, that's why they go to podcasts.
They're not even listening to this commercial.
Why are you arguing with me?
I don't know.
You're completely correct.
Conti and Kenny Show Shorts. Conti and Kenny Shorts from the show, the Conti and Kenny Show on More Like Radio, every Monday night, 7 to 10.
We had to shorten it up because we didn't think we could do this much longer.
It's over 2 minutes. How are we shortening this up?
No, I mean our careers.
Oh, okay. All right, thanks.
Enjoy.
Do you like video games? Are you a little antisocial? Well, listen to Antisocial Gamer Radio, Tuesdays from 3 to 5 on morelikeradio.com.
Red Show, that's an online radio show.
Across the country, are
going shirtless.
Why?
So I don't want to go shirtless.
You guys that have been on the air.
What the fuck? The hosts of the Red Show.
In which there's really no other way to put it, they'd be less funny than that.
And he's your guy on the Red Show because he is a racist. That's the whole reason he's your guy.
Red Show. I went on their radio
and again,
show.
I'm not open. You know, even now at More Like Radio because of Tex Muncher.
He got us fired.
It's a goddamn war zone.
I see the slight shift and I don't like it.
Obviously, hates pretty much everyone who's not a white male in his 40s.
In radio, and that's what they were trying to do. And I remember that.
Bad words, that's words.
Okay, I want you dead.
God. Who's Texy, by the way?
On Twitter. You know, especially I know
what Texy does. He's a fucking all-star pitcher that shits in the manager's office.
You probably deserve the Texy day, I say.
That's right, Jason and Tex, take that. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you, Catherine.
You won over the heart of a Colorado housewife. Congratulations.
He is so banged up. He can't even focus now. He has his hands over his face.
Footer's losing his mind. He's covering his face. He's swaying back and forth. He's like a rape shower.
It's The Red, Wednesdays at 9 East, only at morelikeradio.com.
Hey everybody, this is Alexa. You can hear my Uncle Sean say terrible things on a Hippo Juice show. Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Followed by the Red Show from 9 to 11. And now Mark Out Radio with Big T and Dark Box is on Wednesday too. Join them during their new time slot, 11 to 1 a.m., only on morelikeradio.com.
Hey, you. Yes, you guessed 10,542. Change your username. And while you're in a More Like Radio live page listening to fine quality programming, notice the banner ad just slightly above the chat room. It's a link to something you want in Amazon. Click it. It's probably reminding you to order something you need from Amazon.com. Don't leave MLR and type the URL like a sucker. Just click the link and it'll open in a new window. This way you can buy your shit and continue listening to the show. Now, change your username. It's right there on the right, stupid.
We're back on the Nerd Hour. What's up? What's up?
God, that ad break is so fucking long.
It was. Holy shit.
I could have watched Titanic in the length of that ad break.
Well, the ads in the song told the total of the 10 minutes, which is like an average ad break. I thought it was longer when I played it, mostly because of the rejoiner song that I had listed. But we're back from our 10-minute break.
God.
Well, 11 minutes. But like I said, that's like an average length break. So, not that long. We did have a lot of commercials. I, you know, promote as many since we get one ad break for the slot. We're back. We're going to go right into the new bit.
So tired.
The new temporary bit, as opposed to the new permanent one we did earlier. Again, going to spotlight and discuss the movies of John Carpenter. For those who...
You know, I do Halloween and The Thing.
Yeah, for those who are unfamiliar, he's done a lot of movies that are highly regarded, especially in the cult classic variety. So,
like vampires.
Yeah. Well, there's others too, which I'm going to get to. It's going to be a quick recap. He's got a lot of them, so I'm not going to spend too much time talking about the ones. I'm only discussing the ones he's directed, not producer, unless he also directed. I'm not talking about the ones he wrote or produced only. His directorial debut was a sci-fi comedy, black comedy called Dark Star. The next one, his second film, was, to me and a few others, his best one, Assault on Precinct 13. So, you know, that was in 76. And in 78, he followed that up with either his best or second best, depending on who you ask, movie Halloween. That started the slasher genre, pretty much, and is still highly regarded, even after Rob Zombie did his best work to try to shit all over it. And then starting in the 80s, he did movies pretty much one a year. He did, I believe The Fog was a Stephen King book, which he adapted to a film.
Mm-hmm. The Fog?
Yeah.
No, I don't think The Fog was Stephen King. Mist is Stephen King.
All right, I'm going to research that. But right after that, he did Escape from New York with Kurt Russell. That, I believe, was his first movie with Kurt Russell. No, The Fog was, I think.
The Thing?
Escape from New York, I think, was his first one with Kurt Russell, actually. Then the year after that, he followed the Escape from New York up with The Thing. So at this point, he's riding a streak of...
Which was a colossal failure.
What, The Thing?
And considered a flop until later.
But meanwhile, as far as quality of film-wise, a really good movie. He's on a streak of five good movies at this point. Then this is the Stephen King adaptation. He did the film of Christine.
Yes.
Which, not as highly regarded. It was, up to that point, probably his worst movie to date. Then he did Starman, which had Jeff Bridges and Karen Allen.
Frank Darabont did The Mist.
Frank Darabont did The Mist. Thank you.
You're welcome. Which, by the way, is a great movie.
Then he followed up Starman with Big Trouble in Little China, one of the...
I need to see that movie.
Yes, you do. It's one of the plethora of cult classics directed by John Carpenter in the 80s. After that, he directed... two consecutive years, he did two more cult classic movies. Prince of Darkness and They Live. They Live, for those who don't remember, is the movie with Roddy Piper. And Prince of Darkness is part of what John Carpenter called his Apocalypse trilogy, which began with The Thing and ended in 95 with In the Mouth of Madness. Prince of Darkness was Carpenter once again working with Donald Pleasance. So he played Dr. Loomis in the Halloween movies for those who live under multiple rocks.
Donald Pleasance does almost anything that comes by him.
He does. He does not. He is that generation's Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, no, remember that movie I showed you, Warrior of the Lost World?
Yeah, he was in that one.
Yeah, he was the main villain.
In 92, you had Memoirs of an Invisible Man, and considering the main star was Chevy Chase, that tells you all you need to know about that movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, usually when Wikipedia is saying the response, it's either positive or negative. This one was so bad, it said the film was met with mostly derisive, or however you pronounce that.
Derisive.
Derisive response, which means pretty fucking horrible. Only 6 positive reviews out of 26. So that was his first shithole movie. After that, he did In the Mouth of Madness, which mentioned earlier, concluded his Apocalypse trilogy that started with The Thing and continued with Prince of Darkness. That had Sam Neill as the main star. And it was a financial disappointment, but it did cover the budget. And as opposed to his last movie, it had a mixed reception. So, still though, coming off of Memoirs of an Invisible Man, that was a fucking golden improvement. The next one he did was Village of the Damned. Again, not the best movie he's done. Not even the most average movie he's done. I don't think you guys have seen this, but a step down from the one before. And I just heard something on my roof. No clue.
Oh my god, you're gonna die.
Yeah, right.
I'm just kidding. No, but seriously though,
it's coming for you.
Do you have trees?
Yeah.
You're gonna get tree raped.
Oh god, see you with a tree.
I'm sure it was a bird or something.
Why is there music playing in my found it.
It might just be something, who knows. Anyway.
It was my computer. Did you hear that?
What did it sound like?
It was just music.
Oh, music? No, I thought I heard something like hitting the roof of my house, like crawling across it.
Maybe it's an animal.
Yeah, probably just some dumb animal.
Or a serial killer going to break in.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Arm yourself.
Yeah, I should arm myself.
I think this will be the first instance of on the air someone getting savagely murdered.
Hey, at least the downloads will be huge.
The downloads will be huge, and we'll be on the news, man. It'll be such great promotion.
Yeah, but then I wouldn't get to do Brain Stew in this show anymore, so.
No.
There's that.
That's okay, that's why we hired Cornax.
Oh. Jerk. next, he did a sequel to Escape from New York and Escape from L.A.
Yeah.
Which,
I've heard mediocre things at best.
Because it is mediocre at best. The one shining spot is Bruce Campbell does have a bit role in it.
Okay, that's good.
Then the next movie.
But let's be honest, there's no way it could have lived up to Escape from New York.
No, well, yeah, because
I mean, let's be serious.
His next movie was Vampires, which again, look at who starred in the movie:
James Woods
and Daniel Baldwin. If there's a Baldwin not named Alec, it's going to be a shit movie.
I don't think that's true at all. The Usual Suspects.
Okay, that's different. But still, for the most part.
I just proved you wrong.
On one occasion. Because I forgot there was a Baldwin in that. Not named Alec. After Vampires, the disappointing Ghosts of Mars. Which, it will probably be forever known for having the chick from Species, Ice Cube, and being one of the first American-made movies starring Jason Statham. Well, not starring, but with Jason Statham. And then after that, he did the just completely shitty The Ward. The movie was so bad, I didn't even realize it existed. That's how bad it was. It was so bad, John Carpenter went from semi-retired to completely retired at this point. Well, no, it got mixed to negative, but still, negative. 33%, pretty bad. But
it's not a modern-day Eddie Murphy film, at least.
At least, but still. It's one of those, oh, how the mighty have fallen moments.
Wasn't Eddie Murphy's last movie, 0%, that's pretty, oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Oh, yeah. Eddie Murphy, what have you done? I remember when Eddie Murphy used to be funny. And he looked like he had gotten it back with Tower Heist, and then he just picked another shitty movie. I'm sorry, we're going on Eddie Murphy now.
That's fine, I'm looking up Once Upon a Time stuff.
Oh, okay.
So you can carry on.
No, I can carry on with the bit. I'm trying to make stuff for the show and have...
No, I'm just kidding. It's like John Carpenter pretty much. It's, I don't know if it's just like 80s horror directors, but they start out really strong and then like...
They fizzle out.
Yeah.
Well, it's because so many people expect so much of them, and then they're getting paid so much to do everything. So they're releasing movie after movie after movie after movie, and it's crap after crap after crap after crap.
Yeah, because like if you take away the last decade and a half of his work, and then just spread all his movies out, it's one of the better resumes of a director. But like Ariel said, and you're going to notice a lot of this as we do each different director, the longer you last directing movies, you eventually live to see yourself become a shitty director.
Rather die a hero?
Yeah, better to die a hero than live to see yourself become the bad guy. Right, Christopher Nolan?
Right.
Now...
That wasn't the most obvious foreshadowing in a movie ever.
Obvi is how, what we would say in the current 2013s.
Really?
Obvi, yes. Mm-hmm. Alright, so like I said, I would put for his top five, because it's a really tough one, because again, in the 70s and 80s, he's got a lot of really good movies. I would put Assault on Precinct 13, followed by Halloween, followed by The Thing, followed by They Live. Holy shit, which one do I put? Holy fuck, there's so many that could be top five. Like, Escape from New York at number five.
Well, the only two I've seen is Halloween and The Thing, and I would rank Halloween higher.
Yeah. And again, like, for me, Assault on Precinct 13 and Halloween, they're almost like a 1A, 1B.
Yeah.
Cornax.
Yeah.
You're up.
You know, I haven't seen Assault on Precinct 13 yet. But I can mostly agree with, I move Escape from New York above They Live. Just because, let's be honest, Kurt Russell is a better actor than Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Yeah, like, that's another one of those where they could be flip-flop for me.
I don't know where I put Assault on Precinct 13, but I've heard it's really good, so I would probably include it there. But until I actually see it, I would put it at number 5 and then just basically have Halloween. Halloween or The Thing. You know, I'll just go Halloween, The Thing, Escape from New York, They Live, and then until I see it, Assault on Precinct 13 is at the bottom of the list. Just because I know it's good, but I haven't seen it yet, so I don't want to, you know.
Yeah, and here's another thing, too. One thing that was his strong suit was, aside from directing back then, he was really good at composing soundtracks. Like, not many people know, he's the one who made the theme for Halloween.
Yeah.
Like, that was all him. And it's one of the more iconic horror movie themes. Like, when someone plays...
You instantly recognize it.
Yeah, you instantly recognize
it. Even if you haven't seen it, you know what it is.
Dun, yeah. Dun, 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 dun. I think dun, I can dun, play dun, that on guitar dun, dun, for a while. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's instantly recognizable. It's up there with the Nightmare on Elm Street, the... Doon, 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 and the Ki-Ki-Ki Ma-Ma-Ma in the Jason series.
Or the bells from The Exorcist.
Exactly. Like, you know, it's up there. And his Assault on Precinct 13 soundtrack...
Or that Motorhead song from Hellraiser.
Oh, God.
That's a good song.
It is. But, like, I'm talking about, like, just originally made for the movie...
I know.
...composition here. And I think all of his best movies, with the exception of maybe The Thing, he did the soundtrack for. But The Thing had a good soundtrack too, because it was Ennio Morricone.
The thing is, just let's be honest, Benjamin Grimm, the movie is good. The effects made that movie.
Yeah.
Well, that and Kurt Russell.
Pretty much. Kurt Russell, like we said, Kurt Russell's got a great charisma. And I do feel, yes, like The Thing and Big Trouble in Little China and Escape from New York benefited greatly from Kurt Russell.
Yes.
Because while Carpenter...
I don't know, I haven't seen it, but I'm just agreeing.
All right, well...
Because he's a very charismatic actor.
He is. He's
as I've seen in like Death Proof and things, like he can bring.
Yeah, and
force to the role.
Yeah, and especially with Big Trouble in Little China, he brings that charisma. Like, he's a little more kind of like stoic and badass.
Okay.
In Escape from New York, and then, in The Thing, obviously. Like, he's not as... The charisma's a bit there towards the end, but it's a more of a serious role. But still, though, just a presence that he brings makes him fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that'll wrap... You know, I mean, I know among his worst movies, you guys haven't seen, so I'll kind of take this, and then we'll go to the next topic that I just thought of because we mentioned the soundtracks and the themes. Wow. Ghost from Mars was just disappointing considering who it was, but I could still find positives for it. Village of the Damned, though, was very shitty, I thought. Not that good at all. Like, it's definitely among his... Not his worst, but close. His worst was Memoirs of an Invisible Man. And you know what? This is when Chevy Chase was one of the bigger comedy names, but... You don't make a movie about the Invisible Man with goofy Chevy Chase and his diva-ishness.
Oh, God.
You just don't. It was terrible. And it's not like... And I look back at, like, his last decade or so, and a lot of it is just... It's mostly mediocre with a hint of bad... With a hint of horrible. After 1988...
All right, well, I don't think we can blame John Carpenter too much for Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
He didn't write it, he only directed it. He was basically...
Well, he said the director deviated from his usual practice of titling the film as John Carpenter's because he knew that Warner Brothers would not allow him full artistic control, saying that the studio is in the business of making audience-friendly, non-challenging films.
Oh, shit. But he still took the money. Like that, you know what it is? Once every while, actors do it all the time, but directors, once every while, they do a movie where they take the money.
Well, yeah, it's good.
It pays for shit. I would take the money.
Yeah, exactly. So
I'm just going to say this, though. The budget was $40 million, and the box office was $14,358,033.
So he'd better hope that when he signed that contract, there wasn't anything for gross points, because then he would have gotten fucked.
Oh, you think?
That's kind of like going back to Halloween. This isn't a very well-known story, but Donald Pleasance, he was given a choice as far as his compensation for Halloween. The choice was a set amount, which I think was like... wasn't that much. It was like $100,000 maybe. Which seems like a lot back then, but the other choice was a percentage, I think 10% of the gross of the movie. Now, think of that for a second.
I hope he took the second one.
He didn't. He took the first one because he didn't think the movie was going to do well. And that's whenever an actor screws himself by not taking the points is always when the movie does well. Because on a budget of $325,000, Halloween made $70 million.
Oh, yep. He's a retard.
Almost $7 million of that could have gone to Donald Pleasance.
Oh.
I wonder what he does when he looks back at that.
He's kind of dead, so he doesn't.
When he looked back at it.
I don't know.
I wonder what
cried as he masturbated.
which most of us would have done. Even if it was a female actor, it would have just been DJ Scratch and crying. But, dude, he for $100,000, I think it might have even been in the tens of thousands. I'm not sure. But all I know is he didn't take the points. And, wow, did he screw himself. I haven't seen a bigger screwing since 20th Century Fox was like, hey, okay, George Lucas, you can have the merchandising rights to Star Wars. Like, just a completely self-inflicted boning is where I'm getting at. Any other final comments before we move on to the next bit, guys?
No, I don't really have much to add.
All right.
Yeah, I don't... I was just looking up a bit more about Donald Pleasance and Halloween. I don't really think he cared about the money. Because, well, even though he was joking, he said, when asked how many more Halloween films he was planning to make, he said, I stop at 22. And even though he was only in the next few ones with Michael Myers in it, basically only skipping over three, he was in all of them up to his death.
In his defense, most people skip over three.
Yeah, he skipped three because, obviously, that one was Season of the Witch.
Well, it's not so much that he skipped it. They just didn't use him because they didn't...
Oh, no, but, okay. I know you have a whole other bit planned, but out of all of the creatures and stuff, or all of the things, what is, like, the favorite thing, like, with horror movies or something? Like, zombies, serial killers, witches, werewolves, vampires, what is, like, the thing?
What do you mean, like, you mean...
Like, if you could watch Halloween movies about one being...
Zombies.
Supernatural thing.
Zombies for me. That's my favorite genre of the thing.
Because my shit is witches. Like, I love movies about witches.
I like slasher films, like, with the supernatural killers like Freddy and Jason and shit.
Actually, you know what, like, it's weird. My collection, it's... the two genres that I have the most horror movies of are zombie and slasher.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, I think mine is, the ones that I have the most of are, like, supernatural or, like, slasher movies or ghost movies.
There we go. I've got...
But, witches are, like, I love the movies about witches, and, like, that's why I'm so excited about American Horror Story Coven.
The like, witch ones are usually hit and miss for me. Like, Suspiria is amazing.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, it's never... There's only a few really good ones. And the rest, you're like, alright, like, it's campy and whatever, but, like, there's only a really good select amount that really goes into it, and you're like, yes, like...
For me, I think with the zombie genre, it's partially because there's a lot of my favorite horror movies are zombie flicks, but also the fact that... Because, like, I'm a fan of the technical aspect of filmmaking, too, and the one thing that a lot of the zombie movies rely on are the special effects, which is part of the technical aspect.
Right.
And just the work Romero's done for the genre, too, like I've said before. But again, slasher movies, just, especially when they're done right, because there's been a litany of shitty slasher movies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those boom or bust genres, I'll say. Because, there's been so many movies that you think would have succeeded but didn't, or vice versa, that were slashers. Like, it's very high risk reward. But, and then you got, like, the whatever is the in genre is the safe one for a few years, and then it changes. Like, I'm sure we're going to start having a werewolf trend soon. They tried. After the vampire trend started wearing off, they tried with the Wolfman remake, but no one cared.
I hope there's a new vampire startup, and I hope it just someone fucking rips Stephanie Meyer a new asshole.
I would want to make a movie that just if I did a vampire movie, most of the time would be spent just ripping apart her Twilight books.
I pretty much, back in high school, wrote an entire, basically, TV series about vampire hunters that pretty much did exactly that. Where it was like, fuck all this cutesy bullshit. Let's make it gorier. Let's make it more fucked up than From Dusk Till Dawn. Like, there's fucking a dude with a chainsaw. There's a pyromaniac. there's one guy who quite literally escaped from an insane asylum and now he hunts vampires.
Oh, shit.
Well, he was there because, you know, he went crazy after he saw a vampire slaughter his entire family.
That's true. Now, I do want to ask one question as far as the bit we just did with the John Carpenter bit. Would you rather, do you think it would be easier if I continued it on directors like that? Or do you think it would be easier if I concentrated on franchises?
Well, I think the problem is that I never really, like, I know certain directors and I look at their movies and I'm like, oh, okay, this is pretty interesting or whatever, or I'd like to see their work. But most of the times I just go for movie from movie to movie.
All right, then what we'll do is this next week we'll do Wes Craven movies, as mentioned. But then after that we'll go from genre, we'll go from franchise to franchise for the month of October.
Okay.
So that'll give us a couple weeks to decide which one we want to start with. You know, and now the next thing I was going to go to. What to you? What is the absolute? What's the horror movie theme that? It's the first one that always comes up in your mind. Like, it's the one that's this most stuck in your head.
Like, what do you mean?
Like, when you're thinking of a theme for a horror movie, that's the one that comes up first.
Halloween.
I don't know. Like, when I think horror movie, there's a part of me that thinks slasher, but then there's a part of me that thinks of the old school sort of spooky movies.
Yeah, but I'm talking about music.
Oh, theme as in music. Oh, why didn't you? Okay.
Ariel knew.
Well, when you keep saying themes, you know, usually, and I'm surprised Ariel didn't fall in this trap, you know, because she's a writer too. When you hear theme and you write, you think of a theme.
No,
nah, son, I haven't thought of themes since I was in elementary school.
No, what you're referring to, Cornax, would be subgenre.
Oh.
The theme of the movie is the moral.
Yeah, oh yeah, the moral of the story. But no, in this, we're talking
themes. Or multiple themes would be lessons or morals or things the hero has to learn.
But in this case, we're talking music, Cornax. So what's the...
Score.
Yeah, what's the theme, the main theme song?
You should say the score.
All right, we'll say the score.
Or
I can just say title theme, because that also works, too.
I'm trying to think, but right now, and I don't know if it's just because we're talking John Carpenter, but right now it's the Halloween theme.
That's, I said the same thing.
That's, for me, there's three that typically, I can't think of which one plays in my head more. Halloween is one of them. The other one is from Lucio Fulci's Zombie.
I have Suspiria, whenever I think of that, ends up in my head.
There's Nightmare on Elm Street also comes into my mind as well.
Nightmare on Elm Street's up there too. Another one is Phantasm.
Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna play the theme song, and you guys might not have seen the movie, but so if you guys haven't seen it, you can hear the theme song and give your opinion to see if it does sound. Oh, of course, there's an ad. Why wouldn't there be an ad? There's always ads on YouTube. They make you watch them too. Like, anyone cares. Phantasm, which was directed by Don Cascarelli, for those who don't know, who also did John Dies at the End, which I'm going to review after this.
Ow.
Wait, is this the one? Is this the right one, or did they? There we go. You notice a lot of the best movie themes have a lot of synth in it?
I think more it's the piano chords when they have the, like, legit piano.
Well, like, well, not just legit piano, well, that too, but, like, a lot of the Carpenter themes, like, the songs had a lot of synthesizer in it. You'll notice. And a lot of the European movies also had a lot of synthesizer in it. So, I mean, and they've been some of the more iconic themes. But yeah, then there are some that use the regular legit piano and are fantastic. So, with that, I'm going to move on. Actually, have you guys seen any movies that are, you know, have you seen for the first time that you want to discuss, or?
No, I haven't really watched anything.
Cornex?
You know what movie I kind of saw for the first time all the way through, and also counts as a third horror movie theme, Psycho.
Oh, that's right. You did see that for the first time, didn't you?
Yep.
What were your thoughts on it, since I didn't ask you when you were... Because, Ariel, Cornax is at my place last Saturday. We did a horror movie night. And he saw Psycho for the first time.
Cool.
So what did you think, Cornax?
I think the problem is, it's a great movie! It's wonderful! But everyone's so comfortable with talking about the plot twist that it's like... You know, it's like, oh, this happens in the middle of a movie. But you're still spoiling it, and it's like, oh, everyone's seen it, or they're going to see it. So it's like, you know, it's not like one of those things where, okay, I read a synopsis of this movie on Wikipedia, and then 2 weeks later I randomly see it, but I don't remember anything I read. This is like everyone's bringing up the main point in Psycho. Well, and it's been spoiled so much that it almost... You know,
wait, which spoiler? That the killer's really normal?
No. You know what? I'm not going to be the dick that spoils it for someone else.
Fuck that. We're doing a radio show here.
Okay,
it's fuck like it. 40 it's, years old.
Yeah, the movie's 40 years
but
old.
That's the argument I got. I'm only 20 years old, well, and it's only... like I see Psycho for the... But it's like when I was 14, before I could even see Psycho, I had the movie spoiled for me.
I'm going to assume
it's
that...
It's like knowing that Darth Vader is Luke's father. You know it now.
Oh, God damn it! Spoiler!
But, you know, but it was like... And it didn't ruin the movie for me, but I'm just thinking of, you know, no one... Because everyone's so blasé with talking about it.
Well, yeah, what...
Hold on.
30 years old!
No. Just everyone's so okay with talking about it, but anyone, any younger generation who wants to see it, they're not going to have that magic... that the first group of people who saw it had, where they just went, oh my gosh.
Well, we won't have that with The Sixth Sense or Empire Strikes Back anymore. Like, there's certain movies that it's just, they've aged to a point where it's up, well, you don't know, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
And also...
It's impossible not to be spoiled.
But I feel like it should matter, and it's
like
not saying
Club,
it's a bad
movie. It's impossible not to know that now.
I know it's impossible, and that's what I kind of hate, because... Even though it's a wonderful movie, and I loved watching it, I still wonder what it would have been like with that magic, where it just wasn't spoiled, and it was the first time seeing it. And you not only got that spoiler in the middle where, oh my gosh, you think she's the main character, and then she's not, and then you get that twist at the end where, holy crap, he's dressed as his mother.
Yeah, dude. So a movie like Psycho would not have had as good of a reception in the theaters in the age of the internet if it had premiered then.
Oh, God.
Because, holy shit, shit would have been spoiled early on. Like, shit would have been spoiled before it even had its wide release. Like, some dick would have went to the premiere and spoiled everything.
Well, it's kind of like with shows, too. Like, you can't... Like, I remember, and it was like... 8 years ago or whatever, like, yeah, the internet was still, like, recent, but it wasn't, like, a major thing. We didn't get, like, promos or or things like that, like, way early. We got those, like, a week before the show aired.
Yeah.
Like, you got new promos, they aired on TV, and you were like, oh, that's awesome, like, that's it. And then, and they would replay the season, like, over the summer, and you would get the new promo when the finale aired.
Exactly.
And now it's like, everybody wants a promo a month before the show, or spoilers, or rumors, or things like that, and you're like, just watch the show!
Yeah. Like, granted, I can see if you're not caught up and you, whatever, but, yeah. You shouldn't rely on spoilers, because you're missing out on just the amazingness of the episode, or the amazingness of the film.
Yeah.
Granted, I can be guilty of sometimes seeking out spoilers.
Right, it's like...
But
yeah, no, I definitely, I mean, I do it too, but it's just like, and it's sort of, sometimes it becomes unavoidable.
Yeah.
Just like, let's, but at some point you're just like, it doesn't matter, like, you want to just enjoy it.
This is off topic, but I just thought of something. Do we know what happened to Hammy?
Yeah, he, we were able to get on, so he just went to sleep.
Oh.
Yeah, he's like, do you need me? I was like, nah, no, I was able to sign in, so you're fine. So, and then he's like, I'm assuming, the text he sent afterwards was, I'm assuming since you didn't text me back that everything's fine and I'm going to go to bed now.
I'm so, guessing your text didn't send.
What text? What? No, I didn't, because we didn't have any technical problems. Okay. He was on standby for if he, you know, it was needed.
Right.
So, you know, there's that. And, that threw me off.
Sorry.
Oh, shit. All right, the internet age. And just how people, they want their information right up front. They don't want to be surprised anymore.
And then they complain about, the government want, why does the government want this? You want it too, asshole!
You know what pisses me off, actually? When people, like, don't want the same shit, but then when someone does something different, oh, what the fucking dude?
Yeah.
That can be annoying, too. That happens in wrestling a lot, too. But it happens a lot in movies and TV. Granted, sometimes...
Oh, yeah, you want to talk about, like, things like, oh, I want this. No, not like this.
Yeah.
It's the same thing, like, literally, okay, if you go on Tumblr and half of it is hypocritical bullshit, so if go on Tumblr and they're like, a while ago, they're like, oh, we want the villain to win. We want a movie where the villain wins. We want something where the villain wins. Fucking Hannibal happens. The show. And I'm going to spoil the season finale. Sorry. But the season finale is Hannibal sets up Will Graham basically as the Chesapeake Ripper, which he is. And so Will is arrested. And he realizes that Hannibal is the killer that he's been hunting. So that's so the last shot of the season is Hannibal visiting Will in prison, similar to the Silence of the Lamb shot. And it's amazing. And so everybody on Tumblr is like, we want the villain to win. Not like this. They're like, what the fuck do you think is going to happen if the villain wins? You're going to feel shitty.
Yep.
Because you don't want the villain to win.
But they said they wanted the villain to win until the villain actually won.
Then you realize how horrible it is.
It's kind of like the Joker's speech about chasing a car and not knowing what to do with it when you catch it.
Exactly. Oh, speaking of which, did Harley Quinn, like, do something?
What do you mean?
In the comics? Like, did she, like... Didn't she, like, set off a bunch of bombs or something?
Knowing her, probably.
Wait, she did what?
I don't know, I thought I heard something where she set off a bunch of bombs or something throughout Gotham and killed a bunch of kids or something. Like, killed a bunch of people, and then somebody actually did have this really good argument about Batman, and yes, he's a hero, but he's actually the true villain of Gotham, because the villains, he doesn't, because of his moral code, or because of what he does, he actually makes the villains worse, and he doesn't do anything about it, besides just throw them back in Arkham, and then they just come back right out.
Oh, wow.
And I was thinking about it, and I was like, they're not wrong.
Jesus.
Because anybody, like, any cop or any, like, one of us, if, like, the Joker was doing what he was doing and was killing people, we would have shot him.
Yeah.
When we saw him.
Well, I think enough people would be at the point where it's like...
He would have gotten a death penalty or something like that.
Well, they probably wouldn't, because he is clearly insane. And, you know, but there's a part of me that thinks, you know... Even if you don't do the death penalty, here's the thing. Batman, he's like, oh, I don't want to kill him, I don't want to do this, blah, blah, blah. You put him in an insane asylum, because he is insane, and he is violent, and you know you kill again. Lobotomize the fucker. Give him a lobotomy.
Like, you'll
be like Jack Nicholson at the end of One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest.
And so then the argument was, like, because of his... Oh, shit. So it's, Whoa.
You know who's a better hero than Batman? Axe Cop.
Yes.
Detective Comics 23.2. I found it online, and she apparently gave a bunch of kids game systems, and they were bombs.
Oh, shit, that sounds like Harley Quinn's crazy ass.
And then she went into the police station. She dresses up like a cop and visits the police station with dynamite in her car.
This seems... You know, Harley was sort of insane and violent, but she was also sort of innocent. This is almost like a Nolan-esque Harley Quinn.
Yeah, no? they've been kind of doing different things with her now in the comics.
Yeah, I've noticed. Damn!
Oh, they've been making her dress like a complete whoa, too.
I know, and hilarious. I appreciate it.
Anyway, but so, like, what I'm saying is, like, so, with Batman, like, anything, like, his villains, especially this, given that she did this, like, yes, he's never had a reason to, like, go after her, really, that much.
She specifically gave bombs to children.
Yeah, but now, it's like, and so what is he gonna do about it? Arrest her and throw her back? And, like, there's a point where any cop who encountered her would have shot her, probably.
Yeah, and that's another thing I don't get. You know,
so I understand his code, but he's really the true villain of Gotham because he's just capturing them and they're ending right back up in the streets and hurting more people.
Well, it's not so much the code thing, but it's like, he doesn't have control over the cops. You know, granted, if he says, you know, before, you know, let's try not to get anyone killed, you know, if a cop just randomly shoots at one of the villains, that's that cop's job, and the cop isn't going to get shit for it. He's allowed to have the gun. He's allowed to take that shot. Where are the police? Like, specifically, where is a cop taking a shot at the Joker?
Yeah.
I haven't seen him.
Well, you can't really, like, here's the reason why you can't really call Batman the villain, because of that reasoning. There has to be malicious intent behind the explanation of why someone's a villain. Because...
No, but, like, what I'm saying is he's an inadvertent villain. Like,
He's a fuck-up.
He's a fuck-up. Like, he's trying to do good. I understand that, but...
He's a fuck-up.
If you're sitting there fighting the Joker, if you're sitting there fighting, like, Scarecrow, or you're fighting Harley Quinn, or something, like, people who have... These villains who have savagely hurt people, who have savagely murdered people, and you're sitting there fighting them, and your only course of action is to throw them right back in Arkham, where they escape multiple times, have escaped, like... What... Like, I don't... understand, like, and this isn't working.
You know what, then? You gotta blame the court systems that continually let these people go right to Arkham Asylum, where they've been known to escape numerous times.
But you would think, like, Arkham would be fixed. Or, and at one point, Batman would just be like, you know what? Like, if Joker's sitting there trying to murder somebody, cops are surrounding him, and he's still trying, the cop is gonna take a shot.
Yeah.
And Batman should, you know what, I understand that his whole moral compass is not to do this, but you're not gonna lose a piece, like, you have to just take that shot.
Granted, you can't, it's not gonna look good if all of a sudden Jim Gordon walks up to the Joker and kills him executioner style, but if he takes a shot and it hits, you know, Batman...
Nobody's gonna cry over it.
Yeah.
Batman's gonna be like, damn, but he's not gonna hold it against Jim Gordon. He's not!
No.
I think the greatest piece of Batman fiction, and now that the ending was revealed and it makes sense to everyone, is the Killing Joke. Because not only, yeah, Batman's broken and his code is broken, blah, 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 but I think that's probably the one story where he is no longer the villain.
He's, yeah, it's at that point where he's a human being, and not only that, but then he's also like this hero who's taking and doing what he has to do and what an ordinary person can't do.
You know the hilarious part?
Maybe the problem is that he is more bat than man, because that's sort of the thing of the animal kingdom. You know, he's stopping... He doesn't want this animal to do that, so he'll fight them off so they don't do something he doesn't want, which is basically what any animal will do. But he's not going to stop them from being an animal. It's their instinct. It's like the animal kingdom. You just have two animals fight. They can't stop each other's instinct. They may stop each other from doing something that the other doesn't want. But they're not going to change each other.
Point. And, got two more quick items, and then we're going to end the show for the night, because it is actually 12:50.
Yes, and I am exhausted.
The first one is the review that I was going to bring up. That is for John Dies at the End. Holy hell, see this movie. It's Don Coscarelli directed it. Or Coscarelli, I think, because I just butchered his name. For those who don't know, that well, I mentioned Phantasm, he directed that, and he directed all of them, actually. He also directed Bubba Hotep. So, you know, he's got a very good background. It's based off of a David Wong's novel. David Wong is the pseudonym for the author of the book, of John Dies at the End. It's one of the more original and, comedic horror movies.
I never got into John Dies at the End only because I keep on confusing it with that that Doom fiction where all of a sudden it's, and then John was a zombie. And there's a part of me that thinks it would be hilarious if someone did make that story into a movie, but no.
Well, like, for example, Paul Giamatti's got a role in it. And what, like, the whole thing with his character is fantastic. I like the fact that these people can see, like, kind of have a sixth sense almost. But if it's a ghost, they don't see the ghost or apparition looking the same way that someone else would. And spoiler alert, everyone.
John dies at the end?
No. Actually, do either of you guys plan on seeing this anytime soon, or would be mad about
it? Probably not.
Spoilers?
I already had it spoiled for me, because I looked it up. You know, he gets a one-up mushroom and shit.
Well, funny. There's a few things that happen, but one of the main things is the story that kind of signifies the whole main storyline of this movie is being told. Like, it's showing what's being told from David, who's the main character, to Arnie, who's a reporter, who's played by Paul Giamatti. So they're talking about it, and now everyone knows what Paul Giamatti looks like. Shorter white guy, beard. He's mentioning something about doing an older movie or story that he wrote, and how he was being called the N-bomb, which would insinuate that he's black. They realize Paul Giamatti's character isn't, in fact, a black person. And that was his ghost appearing when he was talking to David. And David didn't realize that he was just seeing the ghost in the form of what he pictured when he heard the guy's voice when they talked on the phone initially. So...
Huh.
Yeah, it's an interesting twist. It's, you know, the whole movie's pretty cool with what they do.
So essentially they pulled a Sixth Sense.
Not really, no, yes and no.
Yes.
Yes and no.
Yes.
I said yes and no. Because, yeah, alright, the guy's been dead the whole time. But, he plays a reporter. Like, there's not some kind of pretentious-y posturing as far as, like, hinting at it. They just go right to it. Like, you don't, you know. And it's just presented a lot differently. So, there's that. There, you know, they've got a pretty good cast. There's actually someone from The Shield, not The Shield, from The Wire in it. The guy who played Mayor Royce. And Angus Scrimm from the Phantasm movies, who played Tall Man, plays a character in it. I just like the general mix of horror themes and comedy in there. I thought it was a very good mix. It's funny, but in the same way that, like, Bubba Hotep's funny moments were. But I think the mix works really well. And with that review, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I believe, debuts this coming Tuesday. And I'm just going to... This is going to be a quick roundtable-y type. Are you excited for it, and why? Ariel.
Yes, because it's cool.
All right.
And because it will expand the Marvel Universe.
Cornax.
No, because I'm probably not going to watch it.
All right, Hammy.
No, hey, I don't watch much TV.
And I'm also excited to watch it. For some of the reasons Ariel said, like...
I don't watch TV. I listen to all the fine programming on morelikeradio.com.
Oh, see what he did there? He did a plug. Yeah. But I like the fact that it is going to expand on the Marvel Universe, because let's face it, they can even bring in characters who they had no plans to make a movie for.
Yes. Or, if they ever do solve the whole thing with Fox, they can bring in Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
That is also true. But also, just considering the fact that, say, again, they could bring in a character as a cast member. Because I know they've been they wanted to do a Jessica Jones movie, TV show, and that didn't go well. They could put the character there. They could even put Luke Cage as a character, for example. Like, guys who, like, you don't really need a lot of effects to make their, powers. So
Luke Cage, you just need a big, angry black dude.
Yeah, you just need a big, angry black dude.
In other words, you just need a black dude.
A relatively muscular black dude. I like the fact that Clark Gregg is going to be in the movie, or the TV show.
Yes, and I hope they explain it as something other than cloning.
I think he just survived.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Because the blood did look kind of fake on the cards.
I'm thinking he survived, and just Nick Fury knew that he needed something.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Which, you know, they probably will bring that up in a third Avengers in a second Avengers movie. Why am I saying third? Second Avengers movie, and they're probably going to be pissed.
Or not. Who knows?
Well, they're going to be excited, and they're going to be like, wait a minute, you fucking lied to us?
One guy who's going to be in it, like as a small, small character, a doctor in there, Ron Glass. No one?
Shepherd Buck.
Yep, Ariel got it. And Colby Smulders will be in the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So... But like I said, this is a good way to introduce certain characters into the cinematic universe without having to give them a movie. It's created by Joss Whedon, so you know the dialogue is going to be fantastic.
Ooh, shit, this is going to be awesome. J. August Richards is in it.
Yep.
I loved him in Angel.
Yeah.
See?
Oh shit! Nick Brandon!
Mm-hmm.
He might be in there. He was considered for Richard's role, so I don't know if they might bring him back as something else, but I hope he's there.
It could be. But with that, we are the Nerd Hour. It's about that time. It's 1 minute to the hour. Again, with me, Punchy, Heel Punchy on Twitter. Also got Brainstew Radio, Fridays, 8 till Nerd Hour. I'm on 360 and 420 on Thursdays and Sunday nights at midnight. I do pretty much every week now do Markout Radio. And once in a while, the Sully Show. You know, I'm busy. I'm a radio whore. I may even have other projects in the future.
No, whore gets paid. You're just a slut.
Yeah, I'm a slut with radio. If radio experience was a vagina, mine would be gaping. Cornax.
Yes.
Plugs.
Just have that name and then put 357 at the end, and then you have my Twitter. All Cornax, right. 357.
All right, Ariel.
Nerd Out Ariel on Twitter.
All right. We will be back next week, bitches.
Onward!
Right. Yes.